We started this second round of talks, and so thanks to all for coming to this session. And as before, as Dominique did, I present myself. So I am Alessandra Carbone. I am professor in computer science at Sorbonne University, and I head a laboratory, a department of computational biology and quantitative biology. So maybe you wanted to introduce yourself.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Fabrice Carra. I'm professor in public health at Sorbonne University also. And I'm very interested in manipulating big data for health problem solution. So
the first talk is going to be by Hugues Achard. Hugues is the head of the statistical genetics, statistical genetics lab of Institut Pasteur. And he will talk to us about complex model inference from multivariate data. He's interested in learning about the genetic and genomic as well, architectures of complex traits and for humans. So we will start with his talk.
Good morning, everyone. As you just heard, I'm doing statistical genetics, focusing on human data, and I've been working a lot on, especially on multivariate analysis and interaction model. And during the past few years, I had a lot of discussion with colleagues, especially in Pasteur, about trying to come up with kind of more complex model now that we have all of those big data. And this is an attempt of about trying to summarize and discuss this. Specific point of making some inference about complex model in multivariate data. So you just heard before with this very nice introduction from Jonathan, we have this wealth of data. We are millions of genetic variants, data from gene expression, methylation, metabolomic data, proteomic, plus data on the exposome, lifestyles, and thanks to those big data bank, a lot of phenotypic quantitative traits and diseases in humans. So we can do a lot of things with all of those data in terms of public health and stuff like disease prediction. I think we're going to hear a bit more about that later. We can do some drug targeting and we can do trying to infer the disease mechanism. And that talk is going to focus especially on that part. And with this kind of general question, can we infer complex relationship linking variables involved in diseases? So because this is a very general question, I will definitely limit the scope. So do things that will be the global architecture, association between the different components, conditional effects, statistical interaction. We're definitely talking about multi-factorial phenotypes, no Mendelian traits, and human studies, and which is a major constraint, which is those are mostly observational data. Also, I think it's, and I will come back to that in the upcoming slide, but I think it's important to highlight that it's pretty clear that for most common diseases, the best predictive models so far still explain a limited proportion of cases. And inferring complex model is unlikely to dramatically change this, but might help understanding the mechanism among the things that are known. And again, I will come back to that in the next few slides. So. Because I wasn't sure about the audience, I'm going to be very broad. I'm going to talk about method, but more from a statistical, analytical strategy. But there's no math in my talk. Just for the background, a few things of what people have been doing so far, because there have been so many studies done in all of those data. So it goes from univariate association screening, and this is probably the bulk of the studies performed so far, and we've just heard the previous talk about these big GWAS in large sample data. But people have been looking at especially at diseases and quantitative traits, but people have been also looking at association between genetic variants and gene expression with proteomic data, with metabolomic data, been looking at links between all of the different parts, most of the study being obviously around here. There have been also especially the past few years, like a lot of studies have started to look at multivariate association screening. So, you know, can we look at like a single genotype and like multiple phenotypes, or the other way around, like multiple genetic variants and a single phenotype, especially when analyzing like rare variants with all of those so-called like burden tests. And like, you know, like more advanced methods where you're gonna have like starting to put together like multiple predictors and multiple outcomes. There has also been like some interaction effect screening. So especially looking at single variants, interaction with exposure on phenotypes. But there have been like a couple, you can find like some studies that have been looking at like some of this intermediate genomic data. There have been also like some, quite a lot of work done on like trying like to look at like interaction effect between genetic variant and phenotypes. There's like not much that has been done in terms of interaction effect for this intermediate endophenotypes, but definitely like a lot between DNA and diseases. So again, this is just an arbitrary sample, just to set up like what has been done in general. And so there have been also like a lot of, you know, like kind of network approaches, and it started like more than 10 years ago, like as we started to get like results from GWASs, like for example, that paper from 2007, they just put together like all the SNPs associated with like diseases, and they try like to cluster them all together, like to make this sort of general, to have an idea of the general architecture. We've heard about like genetic correlation just before, saying that we are progressing on trying to address this sort of global perspective on the multiple traits. There have been like stuff that, you know, that kind of paper that I like, which is maybe not that very informative from a public health perspective, but still I think interesting. So they, and this is actually not human data, this is like E. coli in 2010. So they looked at gene expression data, and they just simply compare the overall architecture of the transcriptional regulatory network of E. coli against the Linux call graph, so Linux, the operating system. Just trying to make the point that it's very different, and so you can think about like expanding that to like across different organisms, for example. Again, like quite some time ago, like 10 years ago, there was like people are already trying like to put together like multiple pieces, just to say that all of this is really not new. So in that paper, looking at like genetic variants, how it might affect like perturb like the regulatory process of multiple genes, and end up like impacting your risk of diseases. So I can go over like that, through examples like the World Day. That's not the point. That was just to say that a lot of things have been done like kind of piecewise, and like to trying to move forward, like trying to infer like kind of complex model. I would like to go over three different points. Like first, I think it's quite important like to remember that we need to adapt the complexity to the objective. Second is like, if you want to go on that path, you have to think about like what would be the cost and criteria for inferring complex model. And I will finish that will be some more like personal opinion about like one interesting strategy that I will refer to as divide and conquer. So regarding the first point, we've just heard like about the GWAS, which is like definitely the gold standard for looking at big data. And there's not only GWAS, there have been like EWAS, like methylation wide association study, like whatever wide. And we know it works pretty well. It's like an anecdotic search using the simplest model, additive logistic regression, assuming linear additive effect, and looking at each single predictor one by one, and testing for association with the phenotype. So this kind of model very likely oversimplifies something more complex that is going under that. So, the effect of G might go through CAI, depending on A, B, whatever you want. And so because of that, we might, at some point think that the genetic effect might be from G to Y might be mischaracterized, because that the mean effect will depend, will be different if you condition on C, if you condition on A, B, or combination of the different factors. And so while it's likely true, we also learned from GWAS that the, and we just heard that before, for multifactorial diseases and common diseases in general, the genetic effects are likely following and some infinitesimal-like model. So we are talking about like a lot of risk factors with extremely, extremely small marginal effect. And in that situation, whatever the amount of complexity, underlying complexity, I mean, you know, you can try to infer that complexity, but in general, nonlinearity, heterogeneity, interaction effect will not matter much in terms of prediction. I mean, and there have been studies, we've been publishing about that, other groups have been publishing about that. And one way to, so the way we did it, for example, was we compare the AUC, which is just a simple measure of the prediction performances of a given model. And what we found is that the AUC estimates from additive model are in general as good as the AUC from model including pairwise interaction, dominance, linearity, you know, something more complex. When we know that those interactions, those dominance effects are true. And that would be the case also like for other purposes. And so, for example, we've been hearing recently about like a lot about Bendelian randomization. It's like a pretty hot topic where there's this whole idea of you can use summary statistics from GWASIS, try to make some inference about causality. So basically, you look at the effect estimates from a lot of SNPs from trait 1 and trait 2, and if you see some specific pattern, you might be able like to show that there is like evidence for a potential causal effect from trait A to trait B. And again, like in that kind of scenario, it's unlikely that that incorporating like nonlinearity interaction effect will change the significantly the result from such analysis. And so my all of this to say that I think in many situations assessing complex model might be very challenging. I mean, extremely challenging, extremely time consuming, and at the end of the day, just unnecessary. And I mean, I've kind of learned that the hard way, like spending a year trying like to find something like relatively complex, ended up saying like it's like okay, it might be interesting from a pure scientific perspective, but it's actually not very useful. And so the mean toward the final objective should really take this into account to avoid like this sort of high risk, low reward studies. And so there was definitely still like some situation where it would be of interest. And again, I think the main point will be about like trying to learn about like the disease mechanism. And in that case, I've been trying to think about like what would be the cost and criteria, but like when we think about like the existing methodology. And so I came up with like a list of 5 criteria. So this is my own list. I guess that if you ask someone else, you might have a slightly different answer. I think most of them will be like still there, whoever you ask, but there might be some differences just to make the point. So I guess the first point is that just you want to set up like a level of complexity you want to incorporate. Like I think I've really heard colleagues like being like really too much enthusiastic about like trying to do like something extremely challenging without realizing like how painful it would be. So do we want to just model some linear effect, nonlinear effects, we incorporate some gene-gene interaction as I was mentioning before, G by E, or incorporating chains of events, whatever. You need to define like a level. Then there will be definitely like the big issue would be the computational burden, especially in those big data with big sample size. And while working on those on that presentation, I found this nice paper from 2015, Goudet et al., where they estimated that testing all possible 3-way interaction from 1.1 million SNPs in 2,000 people, so we are pretty far from like the 500,000 people from the UK Biobank, it would require like the brute force approach would require like 5.8 years on a cluster with like 262,000 cores. Like it's definitely like quite some time. Then there would be like things like flexibility. Again, like we heard like just before, like when you have like a lot of phenotypes, there was like a lot of heterogeneity. I mean, we're whether you're looking at DNA or metabolite or imaging data, those are pretty different input data. So you might want something that would be able like to leverage the best of the existence. There might be also some differences in the format. So like sometimes you can work with individual level data. Sometimes you just have summary statistics. Might also want to incorporate like stuff like output from databases. There will also be definitely another criteria would be like the significance. One very strength of the GWAS is that it's like we have this high robustness and high replicability. So we've been hearing about like a lot of machine learning recently. And you like this is, and I will come back to that in a few slides. So we want to make sure that we can, as much as possible, being able like to test for significance and being able to replicate whatever comes out of our model. And finally, I think it's also important like to have this criteria of like being as much as possible like data driven. Like so quote from Wikipedia, which is compelled by data rather than by intuition or by personal experience. So in practice, I think that would be we aim at approaches that we're going to have like some shorts that will be systematic in order to ensure that the feeding model is compared against like competing ones. And we know also that we learned the lesson that like if you do like repetitive testing of the same candidate like a couple of times, at some point you it can lead to a risk of getting some false positive. So trying like to plot the existence on that arbitrary set of criteria that I set up. So just the GWAS approach would be kind of like that. So we're gonna have like the positive point, it's pretty fast. We heard like we can analyze like tons of phenotypes, tons of data in like a short amount of time. It does have like a formal test of significance. We can replicate results like pretty easily. It's fully data driven, in the sense that it's really systematic. But on the other side, it's like definitely the bottom end of complexity. And it's like not much flexible. I mean, it's like you get one big matrix, individuals and genotypes. So the brute force approach would be kind of like the naive and like a step forward. So you just do the same thing as your GWAS, but now you try to incorporate a bit of complexity, and that would be, for example, like gene-gene or gene-environment interaction. So it has the same advantage of the GWAS. So it's like data-driven. Like you can have like some formal test of significance. The major issue here is that it's increase in complexity is kind of minimal. I mean, if you think about it, like we are talking about like, I mean there would be like a huge computational cost. I got a slide on this. So I took that example. So the if you just want to look at like pairwise interaction, so like two SNPs together and test them for test the interaction between those two SNPs for associated with the phenotype. So there have been some methods that have been published in like 2003, I think that's the most cited one, the MDR, multi-factor dimensional reduction. So that was like 15 years ago. And they were like basically saying like we can do like a decent job in like testing all pairs of SNPs for interaction. And people have been like publishing on that along that line because trying to like to address the computational problem that I mentioned just before, like this mentioned in that paper from Good et al. And people have been preaching about that like basically every year. And so like the last reference that I could find was 2018, SMMB. Looks like interesting again, and they are making definitely some progress. But even after 15 years of research, they are still like kind of limited like to two ways and three ways interaction when there is like potentially an infinite number of combinations that can be tested. So another kind of strategy would be like something that would be highly hypothesis driven. So in some way you say, okay, my true model would be something like that with like a fair amount of complexity. And so you can then make some statistical tests like to assess the validity of your model. You can use whatever input data you want to test specific pieces. But the main issue here is like it's not data driven. And I guess one potential example of that would be this those paper about like the omnigenic model as it was proposed by the group of Jonathan Pritchard. So the idea here is that they come up with this theory that genetic contribution to complex traits might be partitioned into direct effects from core genes. So that's this illustration here. So you get like that have some direct effect on your disease, let's say, and peripheral gene, which effect that will also be associated with your disease, but through the regulation of those core genes. So this is an interesting model. I'm not here like to say anything like good or bad about that, and he might be totally right. They might come up with like some data that show that it really fit the data. But again, I think there will be still a discussion about like it fits the data, but it's still possible that other totally different model will fit the data equally. So you know, it's not data driven. So, and I cannot stop here like talking about methods without like saying a few words about like machine learning. And I'm not an expert in machine learning, but I've been reading like quite a lot recently about that. So in some way, it does allow for a high amount of complexity. It's kind of data driven, although I understand and I hope that I will get some feedback during this meeting. It's kind of data driven, although it's a sampling strategy. There was quite often some sampling strategies, which implies the risk of getting some local minima. There is potentially some substantial computational cost. And I think there's still some question about like the assessment of the significance. And again, like trying to think about it, like it seems on paper, it looks like that's the best way like to move forward. I mean, when you're reading, like there have been like a couple of reviews published recently, especially like, how machine learning can be applied to big genetic genomic data. And in like many times they say some, you know, it's well suited to model complex dependency, to find hiding structure, you know, stuff like that. But when you think about it, I mean, most of them are, you know, like they have like a set of input data, a set of output data, and basically they come up with like a series of transformation of the input data that would link the input to the output. And I guess it's not exactly the kind of stuff I had in mind when I was like, we're going to try like to infer some complex model. I mean, the idea was like, we're going to try to understand whether those yellow points are linked to the outcome without having to model like 10 layers of like intermediate step that would be sometimes pretty hard to interpret. And actually in practice, most of the paper that I found are talking about like a prediction, you know, like those methods are probably extremely well fitted like to do things like predicting specificity of DNA and RNA binding proteins, stuff like that, or trying to identify some specific patterns. But it's again, it's probably not it might be interesting to look at this to address that question, but it's not necessarily like the best option. And so because what we want at the end of the day would be something like that, so where are we going to have like a good improvement in terms of model complexity, so you know, instead of having like only linear additive effect from your predictor to the outcome, we're going to be able like to say, okay, the different parts are playing together. Want something that will be computationally tractable with minimal hypothesis on the data, a formal test of significance as much as possible, and we want like to be able like to use as much input data as possible as well. So which the reason why I came up with this third point of my talk, which is this divide and conquer strategy. So saying like we done a lot of stuff like piecewise that were pretty good and there might be a way to move forward where we can actually split the task in different chunks and use like some sort of stepwise increase in complexity. So, and I will try to discuss especially two points, which is one, if we cannot decipher the interplay at the most elementary level, I was saying before, I've been working a lot on G by E, like single SNP by exposure interaction on diseases, and it's like extremely, extremely challenging. We have very low power, even with like very large data sets. And so the idea here would be like, can we actually look at, instead of looking at single SNPs, can we actually look at set of SNPs together or sets of predictors together to see whether there are some sort of high level interaction. And the second point is about like, are there multivariate characteristics? And I think there's like some methodological work that is needed here, like to explore that, some multivariate characteristics that would be informative about the global architecture. And I'm going to use like two cases go into a little more details about these two points. So the first one is the simple case of testing for interaction between a single genetic variant and a single environmental exposure. That's something I've been working on quite a lot. So I know the limits, but the standard G by E approach, and like I think like that's like probably 90-95% of the studies, of the GWAS studies are about that. So you just do the same thing as the GWAS, you take each of your single variants and you test them for interaction with the exposure. So it has the same advantage as the standard GWAS, although even just that tiny change in the complexity. I mean, now instead of additivity, we are looking at like G by E interaction. Even that tiny increase in complexity can impact the robustness. And there have been a couple of papers that were trying like to figure out like what would be the right way to do that. And in general, I mean, that, as I was saying before, I mean, it has a very low power, and because of that, relatively limited success in real data. And so the alternative would be like going like moving forward like two ways. So first, we can maybe reduce the scope. So you know, basically, you make some hypotheses that things that will be interacting might not cover the entire genome. So you might want to like to focus on the subset. The easiest one would be like let's say GWAS hits. So you, instead of looking at millions of variants, you're going to look at maybe at a few hundreds. And search for global multivariate pattern. So instead of looking at each single G by E, you might say, are there some change in the mean of the genetic effect conditional on the exposure? Or are there some changes in the variance of the genetic effect conditional on the exposure? So Vogel, that's what we've done, like in a paper in 2017, where we took existing summary statistics from a large GWAS, 50,000 people, of gene by smoking interaction effect. And so we took the summary statistic from the interaction effect coefficient and the standard error, and we focused on a subset of 26 SNPs that were shown in an independent study to have some to be associated with pulmonary function. So we're talking about like a pretty good candidate. I mean, like okay, smoking, pulmonary function, and we know there's some genetic component of pulmonary function. But when you look at so that's a plot of the point estimates of the interaction and their confidence interval for those established associated variants. And from that plot, you can see that none of them is actually even nominally significant. You know, like all of those variants are associated with pulmonary functions, and none of them appear to be interacting with smoking, which we know is also associated with pulmonary function. But on the other hand, what you can see is that there was like this sort of like strong enrichment, like two-thirds of this association. So here, the CODEL allele was the allele that was associated with increased pulmonary function. The CODEL allele is, the interaction effect tend to be negative. And so you can run like whatever test you want. It can be just binomial. All of them would be significant. So here, for example, we use like which is something that is getting more and more common. We build like a genetic risk score. So you sum up all of your risk allele, associated allele, and you test whether that genetic risk score is interacting with the exposure, in that case, smoking. And that was clearly significant, again, whatever the test we are using. So saying that we might miss like something that, when looking at in a univariate fashion, that we might capture using like some more multivariate interaction approaches. And so this is something that has been like done in like a couple of other for a couple of other exposure phenotypes, and especially I think now there's paper but like looking at GRS by exposure like published every month or every 2 months, and they are successful. I mean, they are really a lot of time they are finding some stuff. So okay, we don't know like things that have been tried that didn't work, but there's definitely more paper about GRS by E than single SNP by E. And so, you know, making the point that you might be able to identify interaction using this sort of multivariate strategy that have been missed by univariate one. And I think another interesting point that we tried to make in that paper from 2017 was when you see something like that, I mean, this sort of like enrichment for negative interaction, you might think that there is like maybe like a subset of those variants here that acts through some kind of like a similar pathway. So there might be some sort of latent variable here that itself interacts with the exposure. And because it's a limited scope, we can start thinking about like, okay, maybe we can use the most associated a subset of those variants and trying to dig in for like molecular data, like maybe some gene expression data, some metabolic data that would be involved in this mechanism. And so, still, as I was saying before, this is like an area I think that is starting to grow, but there is like still some methodological work that is needed. So we published a paper just a few months ago where we, for example, tried to explore what could be the relative importance of the relative performances of a model where you, let's say, you have like 300 SNPs that are very, very low effect, and that might be interacting with an exposure. So what about like what will be the relative performance of a multivite, a single unit multivite test where you throw all your data at once versus a test where you look at each single variant one by one and you then correct for multiple testing. And most of the time, the multivite approach tend to do a slightly better job. Okay, this is like, you know, like one thing that we've done, but other people have been like publishing papers recently about like this sort of multivite interaction models. And I have to cite, for example, this method from the group from Oliver Stiegel, where they came up with like a linear mixed model to test for multivite gene environment interaction. So instead of looking at mean effect, they looked at the variability. So basically, you look at the genetic effect. So we get G on the x-axis here and Y on the y-axis, your outcome here. And you get the genetic effect across different exposure strata. And the idea is to test whether there is like some variability here of the genetic effect across this exposure strata. Okay, I'm running a bit out of time. So I think a remaining critical part of all of that is that, and people are always asking me when I'm presenting like stuff about like multivariate analysis, is that, okay, how do you decide like which set of predictors you're going to analyze jointly? I mean, you know, like a few years ago, we had like 10 GWAS hits. Now for BMI, I don't know, it's just like 1,000, 2,000, something like that. And so you might assume that that might be a bit too much. And you know, if you look at that plot, for example, at some point there is like no gain, and in terms of like trying to infer some pathway after that might be a bit more complicated. So, which brings me like to the second case that I wanted to discuss. So we've been like the past 2-3 years in my group we've been thinking about like can we use like we have like so many GWAS on many phenotypes and can we come up with some strategy to look for multi-trait genetic signatures. I mean, you know, things like BMI, like there's a lot of correlated phenotypes and we know there are pleiotropy, like SNPs that are sweet with like multiple phenotypes that are themselves correlated. And we wanted like just try to go a bit further. And I'm gonna show you an example of an analysis we've done where we use like GWAS from 13 metabolism related phenotypes. So things like HDL, LDL, and a couple of things related to type 2 diabetes as well. And so we try to build a pipeline. So we say, okay, let's like try to put all of that together. Especially like select like sets of associated variants across all of those phenotypes and cluster them, perform some clustering analysis and see whether the clusters tend to be associated with some specific biological pathways. So that was actually a bit more difficult than we thought, and like that's why the project lasts for more than 3 years, and we had to develop like a lot of tools like to address like a lot of practical questions from preprocessing, inputting missing values. We're working just with summary statistics, and like things like how to do like multi-trait testing and clustering. And so, just to make the point, why we also like we could have looked just at univariate effect, but in like GWAS hit from like each single phenotype. But we want also to try to enrich our set of candidate SNPs for things that will be not only show some pleiotropy, but maybe some discordant effects. So when you have like, let's say, genetic variant that have the opposite genetic effect between two traits that are positively correlated, and we know we've been working on that quite a lot, and we know that multi-trait analysis will be pretty good at capturing like a broad range of effects that will be missed by univariate analysis. And so once we have like a set of interesting variants, then we have to come up with like some clustering methods. It's like 100 of different choices. So again, I think it's a bit arbitrary, but I guess we came up with something that makes sense in the regard of our objective, which is like a model that assumes a multivariate normal mixture that can be performed even in the presence of missing data, because that would be the problem as we put together more and more data. And then after clustering, there was like this sort of sanity check and some sort of validation of the whole idea, where we throw in our cluster into like and compare them against a pathway database, KAG, Reactome, whatever you want, and to see whether they were matching something of interest from a biological point of view. So like these 3 years, like, you know, like in one slide would be kind of something like that with that particular example. So you get a list of SNPs that were associated with like some particular phenotype. So it's a little biased toward like those four lipids because there was like sample size for those GWASs were so much larger than for the other GWAS. But we see the whole principle is kind of working. So we get like from a set of SNPs that are associated with like triglyceride here, and now they can cluster with like other subset of variant that are also associated with total cholesterol, that are negatively associated with HDL, and a bit of those that are positively associated with LDL. And so in that case, okay, there's like a lot of again, some methodological work that is needed, like to, you know, in terms of how to do like the best way to do this clustering. But in this toy example where we try to like apply the standard, there was definitely some matching about like some of those clusters with some specific function. So for example, that cluster was mostly associated with LDL synthesis and transport, while this one with HDL synthesis and so on and so forth. And here, that subset was happened to be just like a kind of a positive control. Okay, yeah, just 1 minute and I'm done. And so this, you know, like to summarize, like this, there is this idea that if you are, let's say you're interested in a particular outcome, Y1, and you get a set of genetic variants that are associated with Y1. So there is this idea here that you might actually use like GWAS summary statistics from other phenotype to split your big bag of SNPs into like subsets that might be of biological relevance. And that subset now can be used thrown into this sort of like multivariate interaction effect model that I was talking about before. And so we can end up with something, you know, like this sort of like stepwise increase in complexity. It could be something like that. And again, I just used like two examples, but I'm sure there's like a broad range of things that can be done. But the overall strategy is like you get like a lot of univariate data and results. And from there, you can try to identify some sort of elementary component based on, like, let's say, clustering or other multivariate methods. And only then you can start, like, to see, okay, how are those big chunks, like, working together? And maybe, like, starting, like, to test for interaction. And also one example, you know, one piece of that would be, like, the GRS by E interaction. And I will just stop there. I mean, and I think one important point was that here, as compared to, let's say, machine learning, we get a strategy where we can actually validate and replicate every step of the pipeline. So, you know, making like a result more robust and more interpretable, in my opinion. I'd like to thank all of the colleagues that have been, you know, in some way been involved in like some of the things that have been discussed. Happy to take questions.
Okay.